What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Buddy.
And we have a special show today, but before we jump into why this show is special, I just wanted to make a point to let everyone know who are, I guess, some of our newer fans, if you're watching and seeing this lovely display, that the reason why Tess doesn't have her camera on, she...
Same story.
Yeah, same story from before. She had a concussion or has a concussion and she can't stare at the screen. She'll get migraines and all that good stuff. So her camera's going to be off, but mine is going to be on, and our special guest. And I'm pretty sure everyone's going to be shocked when you find out who this person is. I was surprised that they agreed to be on the show. Super, super fan of their work. You might know them by their name, David Sandberg. What is up, yeah. David?
Hey, David F. Sandberg, just because there's another David Sandberg out there.
Oh, word. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's always been, it's been weird because he's also from Sweden. He's also a director. And we got famous at the same time. Me, because when Lights Out, my short film, went viral, he had a trailer for his Kung Fury go viral. So I was like...
Oh. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's been very confusing. And now we're at the same agency too, I believe. So it's like, yeah, it's all weird.
Goodness.
They just call you F.
Yeah.
F, can you come up here instead of, okay. That's
it. Got it. And I'm also a Pony Smasher online, so.
This is accurate.
That's more
and I
unique.
Really want to know what this means.
It actually doesn't mean anything. It was just like I signed up for YouTube when it was new, like in 2005 or something. Yes. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. And it's like, I don't know what it is really. So I didn't want to use my real name. So I just like made up something just to see what it was. And then, it stuck.
It stuck.
That's that when you're in college and you need an email real quick and you just pick a name, but then years later, you're like, oh man, why did I pick this? It's so complicated, has numbers. And I mean, it's, you want it to be unique, right? But you went like a little overboard. And I have a Outlook email that's like that now, aside from my Google Gmail. And it's, I hate giving that to people. It's just, it's a lot of words and letters and whatnot. But the Smasher.
I did. I had a YouTube with a different, totally different name. But then when YouTube changed the rules and they made us like start signing in and stuff, it had a password and I don't remember it.
Goodness. So this has been it's been interesting. Asking you to come on the show a while back. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while actually. Ever since I saw your Lights Out short, years ago, and. So when you agreed to come on the show, I was like, yes, this is amazing. And I can't tell anyone. All right. And then, so I was setting things up to kind of get this, to work out. And yesterday, all of my sound like went out. My microphone didn't work. I couldn't hear anything. My headphones didn't work. And I just had the roughest time. I was like, this is the wrong time for this to happen. Like so bad. Right. And shout out to Phil at Elgato. He helped me out on Twitter. Phil, you're the MVP. He got everything up and running smoothly. And I was losing my mind for a little bit if you saw on Twitter. But I'm glad you are here so we can finally talk about a lot of stuff I want to talk about. One of the things I'm interested in, though, before getting into the movie stuff, was I read that you were into animation, or you did a lot of animation at one time. And being a college grad, like I went to college for fine arts. Being an illustration major and wanting to get into illustration, into animation. I was curious about, are you still doing animation and how come you kind of stopped for, I want to say you stopped to do the horror shorts and whatnot. I think your sound went, we can't hear you. Did I mute him somehow?
Can you stop mashing buttons?
I didn't press anything. I didn't press anything. I didn't. I promise you.
No.
Oh, no.
We lost F.
It was the other David. The other David. He was like, look, he has my name. I'm not feeling that. He's like, I'm not feeling that.
No, Pony Smasher, come back.
Right.
Okay, we'll take a break and then we'll figure out how to get him back.
Right. Let's go ahead and pause. One. And we're back. So yeah, technical difficulties. I'm just glad it wasn't me. animation. We were talking about animation and you doing animated shorts before getting into the horror shorts and stuff like that. How did you transition from animation to horror, and are you still doing animation?
A little bit. I mean, I still enjoy it. I mean, the last thing I uploaded was a thing on my YouTube, a video about test screenings that I did animation for. But that was like, I think it's almost 2 years ago now. But I sort of fell into animation back in Sweden because I've always loved drawing and animation and stuff like that. But I was mostly like interested in live action. And then one day, many years ago, me and my friends were going to do a horror movie out in the Swedish winter forest. And it was so cold that we just gave up.
What?
So when I got home, I was like, I still want to make something. So I made like a little animated short, but it was almost like more like a slideshow. It was just pictures. And I put that up on YouTube, and it was in Swedish, and it got a bunch of views. And I was like, oh, well, this is great. And that short was very, it was sort of making fun of censorship, sort of the different, especially sort of here in the US, where you can show any kind of violence on TV, but you can't show, sex or nudity or anything like that. Yeah. So I sort of made fun of that, and I made a short that was super, like, it was big dicks and like very raunchy. But it took off on YouTube. So I was like, oh, this is nice. So I was like, I want to do more of this. So I started using this software called Moho, which is like where you can do more like puppet animation, kind of. Like, it's still 2D, but you know, pretty much all TV shows now have a little bit of that puppet rigging thing. So I did a short, another one with like, yeah, big dicks and nudity and big swears and everything. And it went really big in Sweden and in Scandinavia. This was in 2006. And all of a sudden I was getting all these like offers from little companies and people were like, hey, could you make us an animated like little commercial for online or whatever? Like, we love your humor. But it was kind of weird because everyone's like, yeah, we love your humor. Like, we love your shorts with the big dicks and everything. We want that, but not that, because we can't have like big dicks in our commercials and stuff.
Right.
But I was like, yeah, sure. So I started like my own company and or to just freelancing. I did that for 8 years or something. Just,
oh wow,
making little animations. But it was a lot of, I never really got a chance to do something that looked really good because it was always such a time crunch. And it's like, and as a freelancer, I really sucked at charging for my work, you know, which is a big problem. Because it's like, yeah, how much do we want for this? And it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm kind of shit. You know, what I do is kind of bad. I can't charge much for it, you know.
We have a whole episode on that.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was the great thing about coming to Hollywood and getting like agents and managers, because then they do all that. Like, they're the bad guys, you know. No, but the thing was that I always wanted to do live action stuff. That was like my main goal. So after like 8 years of doing animation, I was like, I need to, you know, I need to be able to show that I can do other things as well. Mm-hmm. So Lotta, my wife, and I, we did a little short called Camp Closer. And I was kind of nervous putting that on my YouTube channel just because I built a following of people who loved my Swedish animated humor. And all of a sudden, here's a little horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But people seem to like that too. And then, you know, the second short we did was Lights Out. Went viral and started this whole thing. I was able to pivot into live action. But yeah, no, I still love animation. I haven't even thought about like, is there something I can do now? But at the same time, I had a meeting at one of the big animation companies, and they were like, are you sure you want to do this? Because like, our movies take like 4 years to make, you know? So a lot of filmmakers like you, they don't want to, you know, tie themselves up for so long, you know, which is true. Like, you can make a a couple of movies in that time, you know. But right. We'll see. Maybe I'll dabble in animation somehow again.
Sounds fun.
Passion project.
Yeah.
Were you always a fan of horror, or did you become a fan more of horror, like after shooting the Lights Out short, or just any of the horror shorts?
No, I've always been a fan of horror. I've always loved that, and you know, did little horror shorts with friends back in Sweden. You know, just go out in the woods, and you have like a bunch of fake blood and an axe, and you know, trying to do like a slasher movie and things like that. So yeah, no, that's always been something I love, and I want to do more of as well.
I am waiting for that. Especially as a fan of your work early on, when I saw the Lights Out short, I was like, I have to, like, who did this? Like, I need to go find this person. And so I sought you out on Twitter, and I was like, dude, I'm a big fan. This is amazing. And I was like, he's going to be like great. But then I remember, you know, I watched a bunch of your other shorts, and some time went by, and then I saw that you were going to be directing a major like film version of it. And I was like, how did this happen? Like, James Wan's going to be like producing and all this other stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, what just happened? Like, how did you transition from, or how did, like, because I know it went viral, but how did you, you know, end up meeting, you know, James and kind of getting these things worked out to make a movie? Like, how did that go?
Well, the surprising thing was how much attention Lights Out got, because we sort of had a plan, almost like, oh yeah, we'll make these little shorts, and you know, maybe then we can get some money from the Swedish Film Institute to make longer shorts, and maybe that will get us some attention, and maybe that could lead to like a Swedish feature, and maybe, you know, like way off into the future, maybe we can get some attention from Hollywood even, you know. That was sort of the dream and the plan. But just with Lights Out, which is just a 2.5 minute short, I was getting all these emails and calls from like agents and managers and studios and producers. And it was just insane, because all of a sudden it's like, yeah, all these agencies wanted to represent me. And like, I have to actually choose, you know, like, okay, well, which one do I want to go with? And what happened was, you know, I chose a manager and an agent and all that. And, just by talking to all these people, I landed with a producer named Lawrence Gray, who wanted to do it. And he was like, yeah, I mean, we should get a big horror name as a producer on it, you know, and he was like, the only two horror names that can really sell a movie at the time, at least, was James Wan and Guillermo del Toro. Mm-hmm. So he reached out to them, and James Wan was like, yeah, he was on board with it. Then it was like a year of, you know, when it first went viral and we got agents, they wanted me to come over to LA to like meet a bunch of people, go on meetings, and like, hey, here's David and everything. But we were like, we don't have any money. Like, we can't go to the US.
Right.
So we had to do stuff over Skype or telephone calls. And then it was like a year of back and forth of making a deal for the movie, like with the producer and everything. So like, I had to get a lawyer, which, you know, you have your whole team. And then it was just like negotiations back and forth for a year, and then finding a writer. So while this was all happening, you know, we were still in Sweden living our lives during the day, but then in the evenings, because of the time zones, time difference, that's when I would have all these calls with Hollywood, you know.
Right.
And we didn't dare to really believe in it or take it for granted. So we kept making little shorts. So we had only made two horror shorts, Camp Closer and Lights Out, when this happened. But since we were just like, well, we're not going to just believe that this is going to happen, so we'll keep making shorts. And we've made a whole bunch of them during that year, just sort of waiting to see what would happen. And then one day, you know, my agent calls and he's like, it seems like the movie's happening, then they want you here like next week. And you know, so then they would pay for the flight and everything. So we basically just packed a suitcase, locked the door to our apartment, and
and you've been here ever since.
Oh, Looks like his mic, your mic went out again.
No. No.
I swear, Discord is a hater right now.
Yeah, Discord is totally hating. And yeah. Not cool, Discord.
Am I back?
Yes.
There you go. And you're back.
I wonder if my volume was too high, and maybe if I get a little too high, it sort of turns it off. Could that be it?
Oh, that could be it.
I'm gonna turn it down a little bit. Do I still sound all right?
You still sound good. Still sound good. Okay. Yeah.
Let's see if that was the thing.
Headphones.
But yeah, that's like, I mean, that's got to be scary, right? Like in terms of, I mean, you know, like it's gonna be promising in a sense. You know, you're gonna be able to, you know, shoot your own movie, but then at the same time, there's all these things in the air because you've never done this before. So, you know, like you said, getting a lawyer and stuff like that, all that costs money, I would imagine, costs money.
No.
Oh, really?
Because the agents and managers and lawyers and everything, they don't charge anything. They only take a percentage of what you make from the deals that they make for you.
Mm-hmm.
So the lawyers, like my reps, you know, got me in touch with, here's three different lawyers we like. And like, it was basically an interview where it's like, okay, I like that guy the best. but it was also like the deal was basically that this producer, if he couldn't get the movie made with me as a director, like if every studio was like, no, he's a first time director, we don't want to do that. Then they would get another director. But instead, I would become a producer on it and get a bunch of money. So to me, it was like, well, that's kind of a win-win because either I get to direct a Hollywood movie or I'll be a producer on a Hollywood movie and I'll make enough money that I can make my own little movie. You know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of a win-win.
That's awesome.
That is pretty awesome. I'd love to be presented with that type of conundrum.
Yeah.
No, do you want to win or do you want to win?
Yeah, and it's so weird, the whole... with the agency thing where, you know, once I picked what agency I wanted to go with, I then had to call the other ones and turn them down, which was so weird. Because like, if it had been a week earlier, I would have been begging for you to look like, please have me as your client, you know? And now it's like, hey, I'm sorry. I'm going with a different agency, you know? Oh, yeah. It's very surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. So you went from, well, actually, yeah, going from shorts to the big budget, you know, type of thing, or not big budget, but you know, like a full featured film. What was the transition like? Like, how did that? What was different about shooting that versus shooting, you know, the shorts, where you kind of have like, you know, you're 100% in control. You don't. You have like, you know, one actor as your wife, you know, and you know. You guys are doing all the special effects and whatnot yourselves, and then going into a situation where you have a crew, you have a writer who does the screenplay, you have all those different elements involved.
Yeah, I mean, everything was different because I'd done everything by myself. I'd never even been on a film set before. You know, everything I knew about making movies, I'd seen and learned from like behind the scenes stuff or whatever I could read up about it. And I was like terrified that they would find out how, you know, inexperienced I actually was, because they would ask like, oh, so do you have what DP do you usually work with? And it's like, eh, I usually just shoot it myself. Like, okay, do you have like a storyboard artist you work with? It's like, no, yeah. It's like, oh shit. They think I'm like, I'm super experienced, but I think it was probably a good thing that I was from a different country, because then it's like you could almost pretend like, oh yeah, I've done all this stuff back in Sweden. Yeah. You know, I'm a big deal over there. You know, but then since I've never been on a film set, I had no idea how they worked. You know, like what are the sort of different steps and routines, and what can you do, and you know, just interviewing people for different positions was basically me just asking them so what do you do? What is your job? Because I have no idea. What does a script supervisor actually do? Supervise the script, I guess, but what does that mean? You know. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge learning experience. That was kind of my film school in a way. but so and it was tough, to be honest. I mean, it was very hard just to trying to navigate this whole thing while making a movie.
Yeah, so, it sounds difficult.
Yeah, no, it was. Now, and I was quite depressed. And the thing was, you know, when you're shooting the scenes, it feels kind of, you know, it felt kind of lame, you know, like it doesn't quite feel like a movie, you know. But I figure, like, oh, but, you know, then in post, I guess, you know, with all, they put like a filter on it, and then with sound and everything, it's suddenly going to feel like a movie. And then you watch that first cut and you're like, oh, it feels exactly the same. So it's like, oh no. So, but like, I thought it would suddenly be a movie, but no, you had to really work on it and really like cut out as much as you can, because it's like, oh, I hate that. How much of that can we take out? I hate this. How much of this can we take out? Which is why it's an 80-minute movie. You know, like, you just go through it and cut out as much as you can that you don't like, and hopefully, you know. But I was quite depressed even like during the edit of like, oh man, this movie's bad. I was like, you could probably cut a cool trailer from it, but as a movie, it's like, no. But then we had test screenings.
Yeah.
And that changed it to see that, okay, it's actually working and people like it.
Were you surprised that people liked it?
Yeah. I was very pleasantly surprised. See, it's just how well it worked.
Was that more of like a, I guess, almost like an imposter syndrome thing? Like, maybe this isn't what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you still deal with that. Like, I do.
Like, well, no.
Why are they even hiring me? Like, or do they not know how much I suck? You know?
It's okay. I went through that today.
Did you, do you find it getting easier now? I mean, or at least easier since, you know, you went from Lights Out to Annabelle Creation. Did you find that process a little bit easier since it was like your second film?
Yeah. No, Annabelle Creation was, it's still sort of the best filmmaking experience I've had, because we had, you know, just the right amount of money and days to shoot that movie. And to me, when I went into that, I was like, okay, now I know how a movie is made here. You know, I know all the steps, and I know what's going to happen after this, and, you know, what post is like, and what marketing is going to be like. Like, now I know. So, yeah, no, it was a great experience. And I think you do learn to just sort of brace yourself for, like, watching that first cut. Like, okay, I know it's going to be bad, but that's okay. We're going to work on it and change things and make it good, you know? So you just learn to prepare. You know?
I always thought that kind of that idea is really interesting, because, you know, obviously most of us, we just watch movies on the final. And I always wondered what that was like for the director, because just like you said, it feels really weird. You're standing there, you're watching something get filmed, you know, people are doing things, and you're like, is this going to turn out right? I always wonder how a director or a photographer knows they got the shot, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that can be hard. I mean, I often, at least on the first, it's definitely on the first movie, I was so sort of stressed out that I was like, oh, we don't have time to do anymore. Like, it's good enough. Let's move on. Because I also didn't really know how scheduling worked. You know, they would show me like, okay, this is what we need to shoot on each day. Does this look good to you? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, if it's not me shooting it at home, like, yeah, I could shoot more than this in a day, but I don't know what the pace is on a film set. And I also didn't know that. I thought that if we don't shoot what's on the schedule for that day, then that's never getting shot. So I was like, oh shit, we have to, like, at the end of the day, you really have to rush through it. But then I learned that, no, like, if you don't get it that day, you can get it the next day and, you know, reschedule and reshuffle. It's like the schedule isn't written in stone.
Well, that's good. Because I can imagine, like, things just kind of happen, you know, the weather changes, or, you know, your lighting is different from one day to the next, and that can kind of, you know, and then also cost comes into play, and where you're, you know, if you're shooting more than the days that you're allotted for, you know, and trying to juggle all that while still getting the best shots you can get. I can see that. And that's, that's even just coming from a you know, creator aspect, like, none of this is going the way I thought it would, but it still worked out. It still worked out somehow.
Bossy said the same thing.
Really?
I mean, I watched the movie. I don't know. He had a lot of stress when he was in the cutting room. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I was told that on the first movie from the producer. He said that, you know, when Ben Affleck was doing Argo, he was in the cutting room going like, "Oh, my career is over." And then he won, you know, Best Picture Oscar and everything. So it's like, I think everyone feels that way. But it's also like, people don't know what your intentions or goals were. So you might have, you know, aimed for this thing, and then it turns out, oh, we only got like 25% of that. But, you know, so you feel like, oh, that's a big failure. But people who see it, they don't know. They just see what they're presented with.
That's interesting. The I mean, just the idea of intent, because you kind of stuck with it in sense of like, this is what's out, and you know, everyone sees it, but it's not necessarily what I wanted, you know, to happen or to, you know, present. How did you come to direct Shazam? Like, how did that kind of turn? Because you were doing horror, you know, with the lights out, and I expected to see, you know, maybe a Lights Out 2 or, you know, something along those lines. But then you went to the superhero route, and I was like, oh, this, okay, let's see what this is.
I mean, that thankfully the studio seems to like working with me, you know. So I mean, after Lights Out tested the way it did, they came to me and was like, hey, would you want to direct a sequel to Annabelle? I was like, sure, let's do it, you know. And then same thing when we were finishing that up, they called me and it's like, hey, we have this thing called Shazam. Would you be interested in directing that? And they sort of pitched it to me, and I was like, well, yeah, of course. So it was them. I don't know how what they saw in Annabelle Creation that made them go like, oh, Shazam, beyond like liking working with me, I guess. And I work with kids, so maybe that was an overlap, you know? But yeah, I was just like, yeah, let's go. Because I'm very thankful that they've been like that with me, because I hate the whole sort of pitching process and trying to get things made that way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if they call me and they're like, hey, want to do this movie? So yes, let's go, you know.
That's I like cool. That. I did see that you did sneak a little horror in there, though, with the board meeting. Because I was a little like, not shocked, like this couldn't be in the film, but the tone was very, it felt like original Superman kind of superhero film. And then when that happened, I was like, oh, okay, this changed, this, you know, it escalated rather quickly with that scene.
And to be honest, that was actually the studio going like, you know, lean into your horror roots. Make it scary. I was like, oh, okay. and to me, I mean, I like when movies are like, it felt like when I was a kid, that movies were more like that, where even kids' movies had some scary elements to it. And it wasn't just like, yeah, this is a kid's movie, so it's only this, you know, like you could have that range. So, yeah, which I love. That's the kind of movies I loved as a kid.
Yeah, I noticed some of those horror elements when I was watching it. I was even some of the shots, like, just again, I don't know any director lingo, so you can shoot me after. But it was like this, like, kind of running camera move when I think it was like when Billy was walking up to the house, the first house where he goes to meet Rachel Batson or whatever. And I just got this eerie feeling while I was watching that. Even it's supposed to be like a kind of a exciting moment or happy moment, but it just read kind of, oh, the camera's following him, like something's about to happen. If that music was going right then, it would have fit perfect.
Yeah, and we wanted to have it feel a little uncomfortable. Like, we found that that's a real location, that hallway, but it felt very depressing, kind of like a prison almost. And we added like people fighting behind the door, so some yelling there, just to feel that, oh, this is not quite the place he imagined he would find his mom in.
Yeah.
That worked really well. That it worked did. Really because it's unsettling in a way, and you don't necessarily know why at first. With the camera following him, it's like, oh, okay, I get what this scene is doing, but I don't feel comfortable. Like, before we even got to that point, like, I feel a little, things are a little off. So, yeah, I see a lot of that in Shazam. Was there any pressure to make Shazam a certain way? Because I know, like, with their other films, you have to kind of be a part of the DC EU type of thing, like, have some type of tie. But it seemed like the first movie didn't have a lot outside of, spoilers if you haven't seen Shazam, Superman at the end. was there any pressure to kind of add more, being an origin story?
No, it was very much just, make the best Shazam movie. And then it was sort of on us to add all these. But yeah, we want more references to DC because that's fun. And we had all these toys and built that whole toy store and just filled it with all kinds of DC stuff. The only thing was we weren't allowed to use any characters that hadn't been already introduced in the DC EU. So we could have Aquaman and Flash and Wonder Woman, but not beyond that. But no, it was very much just it only had to be a good movie on its own,
Yeah. That's awesome. That's fun. Tricky in this, because I know you can't really talk too much about Shazam 2, but are you having the same treatment with this one? Because we know the Black Adam film, and they have ties being, in the same, the similar histories, and in terms of getting their powers. In this film, are there more ties to the DCEU in that regard?
It's quite similar to the first movie and how it's tied together, I would say. And it was kind of the same when we were making it. It wasn't really, oh, you have to put this in there so it was pretty free, but it is definitely in the DCEU, which you will see in the film. Yeah.
And we get to see it sooner than later, we hear.
Yes, it's a Christmas movie now, which the first one should have been, but yeah, which is fun. I'm glad it's coming out early because it felt like it's so far away, like summer next year, because last Christmas and New Year, I was like saying to Lotta, I was like, man, we're going to have to celebrate Christmas and New Year one more time before the movie even comes out, it's so far away. But now, we'll celebrate Christmas after.
Good. That's cool. Do you do you find it as difficult to, because you shoot the movie and everything's done, and then the studio will say it's coming out months and however long later? Is that something where it's difficult to like you want to tell people about it, you want to see everybody's reaction, but you have to wait? Is that a difficult thing to do?
Yeah, and I'm just a pretty impatient guy. These things take forever. Once you shot it, you just want it to be oh yeah, here it is, here's the movie,
right?
But it's with all the visual effects and everything, it just takes so long, just so many VFX reviews, and it's just so iterative, or such small increments each time. I think most people don't quite realize how long post-production is on these movies, because people are like, well, you wrapped last August or September. Why isn't the movie out now? It's like, because it takes a really long time to do all the visual effects.
Mm.
And we want the visual effects to be good, so we'll wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that why it was difficult? Because I know we haven't, I don't think we've gotten a trailer for it. We got the teaser at the big DC event, but we haven't gotten the trailer. Is that the same along the same lines?
Yeah, well, mostly also because since the movie wasn't supposed to come out until more than a year from now.
That's right.
They have, now I guess they'll have to start looking at that, making a trailer and when to release that, things like that. But yeah, and once that happens, what they do is like they'll cut together a trailer, and then you'll have to put those shots that are in the trailer will now have to sort of move to the top of the pile or the top of the line so they can start working on them for the trailer.
Do you, what was it like shooting amidst COVID? Because I know that's got to be a kind of a nerve-wracking thing with, I would assume people were masked up and, you know, and whatnot, but I know that not everyone agrees with masks and, you know, being vaccinated and things of that nature. So was that like a difficult, made things, you know, more difficult shooting amidst COVID? Oh, your mic is out again. Sorry.
Discord.
Am I back?
There you go. Yes.
Yes. We're going to have a very, very, very stern talk with Discord later.
Yes. Goodness.
Not what we were saying. Oh, yeah, the masks and everything. No, I mean, first of all, we were very lucky that we never had to shut down, you know, because there was a lot of other movies shooting in Atlanta at the same time where I heard about, like, oh, now the lead got COVID or now the director got COVID and they had to shut down. We never had to shut down. But it was very strange because I think the mood was a little bit different as well when you can't see people's faces. Because what happened towards the end of it, they actually changed the rules so that if you're vaccinated and you're shooting outside, you don't have to wear masks. So all of a sudden, you know, you show up on set one day and no one's wearing masks. and it's like, and I realized that, oh, I had no idea what the people I've been who I've worked with for months now, what they actually look like. Like, you know, in my head, I made up like, oh, how the bottom of half of their faces look like. And I was so wrong. So it was hard to recognize people. But the mood was so good. I think like you kind of need to see faces and see smiles and things like that. Like it was just, it was a big difference. But otherwise, I mean, it was a little bit weird. Like, then you get tested 3 times a week and you have to wear the masks. And and we've been getting tested 3 times a week during post as well. But now it's just once a week. So it's weird, but it was doable. And like I said, we were very lucky. Like towards the end of the shoot, where it's like, oh, I just longing to go back home, you know, like it's been a long shoot and everything. It's like, please don't let like Sack get COVID or something and we have to shut down now, you know, when we're so close to being done. But it worked out.
Honestly, my head, like, this is where my head goes, obviously, but when you were saying, oh, I don't know what people look like, you know, they take their mask off, and I just had this idea that you're standing there, like, looking up at Zachary Levi, like, I didn't know what you look like this whole time. And I was just imagining your face in awe, because my face would have been in awe, but you don't have to tell him that I'm thirsting. But...
it's funny, because you get so used to masks that...
Yeah.
We've discovered in the movie, like, oh, there's one of the extras still has a mask on, like in a couple of shots, which no one noticed on the day because it's just such a normal thing. But now we have to like paint them out of the movie so people aren't walking around with masks.
Goodness. Do you ever, I know like this kind of happened because they're like, oh, you know, you're a good director. Let's do Shazam. Are there any genres that you're looking to direct that you haven't done yet?
Sci-fi, definitely.
Oh.
Yeah, I love sci-fi. We're the sort of grounded kind of sci-fi, not necessarily like big space battles, but like your, you know, Source Code or that type of movie or...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love that stuff. Yeah. So that's... definitely something I want to do, and more horror. But I'm also open to like, I want to try all kinds of things, you know.
So is that something? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying I'd be happy to see a sci-fi movie that you direct.
Yeah, me too.
Is that because I was reading that you, I think you started your own production company or something along those lines. Is that mainly for horror, or is that where you're going to test out the different genres and sort of, you know, direct those there?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely horror to start with.
Okay.
And we'll branch out from there, I guess. Yeah.
Awesome. So is it potentially in the air that we're going to get a Lights Out to? Because I'm personally looking forward to it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it might still happen. We had a script at one point, but it's like, it's been so long now that like Gabriel, who plays the kid, I mean, he's so old now. I mean, he's basically going to be an adult. So I think you'd have to
recast.
Yeah. Recast. No, I think we would just play into it. But no, we'll see. At the moment, it's not much happening with it. But who knows? I know, you know, Warner Brothers, they want a bunch of movies for HBO Max and stuff like that. So it could be a thing for that, maybe. I don't know.
Well, speaking of HBO Max, how did you feel about the... You know, they were doing the run where their movies would come out in theater and on the app. I know a lot of directors they weren't happy about that. I mean, granted, your movie kind of fell outside of that span. How did you feel about the movies going to the app as well as in the theater?
I do love theatrical, and you know, I want movies to be released theatrically, but at the same time, it feels like that is the future we're going towards. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I love video stores and arcades as well, and they're gone. You know? So it feels kind of like that's where we're going, which I'm not super psyched about. But to me, like, I'd be okay with doing movies that go straight to like HBO Max or something like that. To me, the important thing is that there's still a physical release as well. Like, because for two reasons. I mean, one is like, there was a movie on Shudder that I wanted to watch. And while Shudder is great, there's video and audio quality is not the best, because they're kind of a smaller service, you know? So right. I was watching this horror movie and it's dark and it gets all blocky, you know, because the can't keep up. So I was like, I don't want to watch this like this. Like, so I went to iTunes. I was like, I'll just buy it on iTunes instead, because they're better quality. But it wasn't available. It's like, oh shit, well, maybe I'll see if there's a Blu-ray. But no, because it's a streaming exclusive. So the only way to see it is that way. And another thing is the thing where they can change or update or take movies away even after you bought them. For example, like on iTunes, I mean, most of the time it's great. Like, if you buy a movie in HD, for example, and then it gets released in 4K, then you automatically get the 4K now when you try to watch it.
Nice.
Which usually is great. But sometimes when they do a remaster, you know, they change the colors or they change the sound or something. So now the movie that you bought doesn't look the way it did when you bought it. And you may hate that. You may want to have the original version, you know, yeah, they can pull movies if that you have in your library. And so I think physical releases are important, not just because the quality is still better than streaming, but just because then you have like a snapshot of the movie from that time, you know? So,
I feel that way with Netflix, and there was a bunch of films like His House, the horror film on there, which I love. Yeah. And I can't buy it anywhere. Netflix, please. And then also, like, I was trying to find a copy of Pontypool, and I couldn't. Like, I couldn't find like the disc copy, or I finally found it, I think, on iTunes. But because of, I have like the movies everywhere type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I was hoping to find it on other apps, because if they pull that film, I'm just like, what? I can't watch it. You know, like, I want to anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that's worse when you're like, I have money. I want to give you the money for the movie. Just let me do that, you know? But no, some movies you just can't get a hold of, except for like piracy, you know?
And I hope they do this. I hope they do it where it's like, we've had it for so long, and if you've seen it streaming, then cool. But later on, we're going to sell it like HBO does. Like, we'll sell it later, you know, a box set or whatever the case may be. When you go to shoot a movie. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Tess.
No, I was just saying, ooh, box sets. Like, box sets. I was just thinking of, like, getting anime in box sets back in the day from FYE.
I remember FYE. Such an interesting place.
Yeah.
And it mad expensive to get, like, just Dragon Ball Z stuff. And yeah, just, it was great to visit, though. It was great to visit. Looking at, like, going from the shorts to the films again, with the shorts, you were in complete creative control. With the big, you know, the bigger budget films, not so much. Was that difficult? Like, I would imagine, like, Lights Out, granted, I don't know how much of a story you had for that, but to have someone go, like, I think, you know, we should have these characters, or we should have this dialogue, or whatever. Is that a difficult thing to do? Like, to kind of collaborate?
There's things that are cool about it. For Lights Out, I sort of wrote a basic treatment for what the story would be and who the characters would be and everything. But the cool thing about working with other writers is that, you know, they'll come up with stuff that you wouldn't come up with. And sometimes they can also, you know, enable you to challenge yourself in that, you know, if I was writing this, I would be like, oh, no, that's going to be hard to do. Yeah, let's not do that. I'll write something different instead. But now if it's someone else writing, it's like, oh, okay, well, this is going to be hard, but we'll give it a shot. We'll try to make it work, you know? So there's, you know, upsides to it as well. And you get to work with talented people, you know?
Well, that's good. I think I have like two more questions. One of them, though, which I think is interesting, just because I heard that you were an introvert. And
yeah,
me being an introvert, there's some things I want to ask. And one of them was, how do you deal with people knowing who you are? Like, being an introvert and for people who don't know, being an introvert doesn't mean you don't ever want to be around people. You don't ever want to speak. That's not what it means. It's more so like it's a lot of energy transfer. And there's times where you need to be alone to kind of like power back up. But someone who is directing like Shazam and Shazam 2 is like, oh, that's the guy. I want to get his autograph. I want to, you know what I mean? Like, how do you kind of deal with that and being more introverted?
Well, the autograph thing is not bad. It doesn't happen so often that it's annoying. And it's a pretty quick interaction. No, I mean, I used to try to hide that, but I've since tried to be very open about it. So, because I don't want people to think I'm rude, you know, like if cast or people I'm working with, like, oh, they invite me to something and I'll say no all the time. Like, you know, it's better that they know that, no, it's because he's an introvert and he needs his alone time. So they don't think it's like, oh, he must hate me because he, you know, he doesn't want to hang out or do this or that, you know? So I try to be more open with it, and so just people know that, oh, that's the way he is.
Well, that's good. I can imagine. Being a husband and a father, and, you know, because you can't necessarily be away from your family, but then you going out and then being around other people as well, having a job where you basically have like a second family, you know, with the cast and everything, and I can see that being a little tough. Like, I could definitely see that being tough.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, you have your alone time, or like you know, sneak away to your trailer or whatever, and, know, get some recharging. But yeah, no, it can be very draining. I mean, especially when it's really long days and all that stuff, and you don't have time to get away, you know.
Gotcha. And then my last question is, what are your hobbies? Like, what are you doing when you aren't directing a big budget film?
Well, I watch a lot of films.
Well, that makes sense.
Some gaming and things like that. But mostly retro games. Because I don't play a lot of newer video games, except for some, like I love the Paper Mario games. I play the Origami King, and I love horror games like Resident Evil and things like that. But yes, a lot of newer games, I don't try every now and then, but it's like, I try Fortnite and it's just, you just get killed
No.
right away. It's like, well, this is not for me.
Yeah. Nope.
No, but so like, yeah, I love the older games. So I have like that arcade cabinet that you have there, the MVSX Neo Geo. I bought all the little like mini consoles, like the mini NES, SNES, TurboGrafx, Genesis.
Nice.
Yeah, no, I have certain games I like, but I'm curious about newer games. But yeah, they scare me a bit, and it also feels like sometimes that I'm wasting too much time. I could be doing something more productive,
Totally.
which is not a good feeling to have because it's like, no, but it's all, experiences, even if they're virtual, I think that it can still be valuable. So I'm trying to get out of that mindset. But what else? I mean, yeah, I've started running. I do that a lot.
Nice.
But I'm sort of an all or nothing kind of guy. So I went from, so now that I've started running and like working out, not now I run, so 3 days a week, I run like 6.5 miles. So it's like, it's like either nothing or like I'm going all in on this, but it's, yeah, I feel so much better now than before when I was like eating donuts and soda for breakfast and waffles and things. But
Oh, so delicious.
yeah, but it's like, yeah, I was getting health problems. I mean, I've entered my 40s now, so it's like I better take care.
Okay, we're right there. We're right behind you.
Right.
I
Yes,
love to be running too, but I can't even bear to be outside. Oh,
Yeah.
light.
COVID, being in like stuck indoors has definitely helped add a few pounds, definitely. But yeah, I want to say first, well, not first off, but that it's really awesome for you to come and hang out with us. I know you're busy and you got stuff to do, and being a big fan of yours, I was like, oh, this is such a cool thing, and I was losing my mind for forever. And getting a chance to talk to you and just about movies and everything, I really appreciate it. We really appreciate it, you being on the show.
Yeah, no worries.
Tess, do you have any final questions?
Actually wanted to know what some of your favorite horror movies were.
Oh yes.
I watched one recently that's really good, a Norwegian movie called The Innocents. It's coming to theaters next month. Or wait, no, or May or something like that, I think. I really love that one. But in general, it's like, I love all the classics, like The Thing and Alien, Aliens, because especially when it's a little sci-fi in there with the horror,
Yes.
that's awesome. Tremors, it's like, that's almost like a perfect movie,
Yes.
But yeah, a lot of John Carpenter stuff and, Nightmare on Elm Street, I was always big on.
Yeah, we know all about those. I didn't
Yeah.
sleep for a while.
Yeah.
Watched those
No.
way too young.
Yeah, we were too young for that. That was the major problem, and no.
Still watched it, but way, way, way too young.
Yeah, in Sweden back then, when I was growing up, they still had censorship. So I sort of got to experience those movies twice. First, when I rented them and they were like censored, so they cut out a lot of the violence, even in movies like RoboCop. The first time I saw them was the censored versions. So then when I got older and was able to like get imports or find the uncut versions of them, it was like, holy shit, RoboCop is really violent.
Yes.
And finally got it. Like Texas Chainsaw Massacre was banned in Sweden for many, many years.
Oh, wow.
So first time I watched it was on LaserDisc in the
Laser
90s.
disc.
Yeah, I'm old.
Yes.
And the thing was like, you almost build up this sort of image of like how horrifying something is, especially if it's a banned movie. And then I saw it, and it's like, this is it. Like Texas Chainsaw Massacre is great, but it's not very bloody or violent, It's just kind of, it has a weird mood.
I think that's more like when they like, for instance, Alfred Hitchcock with like Psycho, where a lot of the horror was shown off screen, and you kind of built up everything in your mind what was happening. I think it's more along, you know, along those lines. But yeah, definitely solid, solid picks. Well, again, thanks for hanging out with us. We had an awesome, awesome time. Everybody, if you're watching on YouTube, which you should be, definitely subscribe and hit that notification bell so you're up on all the new content. And follow us on Twitter at TheGameCast1. So you know what's going on. Because this was awesome. You didn't know this was coming for episode 80. You did not know this was coming. I didn't know it was coming. So you definitely want to follow us so you're up on all the new content. And I think that's it for house cleaning. Tess, you want to carry us out?
David, thanks so much for joining us once again. Thanks for your awesome work. I do have to say, I have a friend who was really pressed on Annabelle Creation, and so she really, really digs you. So just got to let you know, Carrion, I did you a solid. for everybody watching and listening, once again, thanks so much for hanging out with us. Just remember, wear your masks, get vaccinated if you can. Hashtag, please be nice, be kind, don't be a dick. That's it. See you next week, or not, maybe. And we're out. Bye-bye.